The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
This episode of the Broski Report is brought to you by Etsy. Shop my collection of favorite holiday gifts that will make everyone on your list feel seen.
Direct from the Broski Nation headquarters in Los Angeles, California, this is the Broski Report with your host, Brittany Broski.
Hark, all the bells, sweet silver bells, all seem to say, throw cares away, Christmas is here, bringing the cheer to young and old, weak and the bold, oh, the broad, raising the sun, oh, yeah, the dale, telling the tale, call it a bring it warm, people sing the songs of a cheery Christmas, it's a merry, 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 merry Christmas.
That song is really just them stimming on the beat. They gave a 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And they did Darius. That's the like most Darius Christmas song. Guys, drop your favorite Darius stim below in the comments. I'm going to be looking. I'm going to be looking and rating and liking. Guys, welcome back to the damn Broski Report. Seriously. Give it up for yourselves, guys. We've made it like 100 million thousand episodes of me just staring into these soulless cameras and hoping to connect with another human body. And guess what? We have. Okay, guys, lots to discuss today. I know I always say this, but today it's true. All the other times I've been lying. Today it's true. Welcome to my winter wonderland. Welcome to So This Is Darius. Durr, 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 durr. Sorry. I do love Darius. And his mom sells a Darius, like, plushie. Okay? Here's something that I've literally been, like, clawing at the bit. Chomping at the bit. Clawing at the bit? Chomping at the bit to discuss. Bitch. Read it and motherfucking weep. And guess what? I kind of did. Wuthering Heights. I finished it. I know I've been talking about this damn book for a month. It took me a month to read just because I'm busy and I can't like sit down and power through a book the way that I want to or the way I used to. But I finally finished it. And by the way, this copy, you would think it's from like 1901. This is from 2003. Why does it look so damn old? Why is it yellow? And look at this, Wuthering Heights. So this is like obviously one of the classics, published in 1847 by Emily Bronte, who is one of the Bronte sisters, she's kind of known, at least from the media that I've been consuming online. She was the brilliant sister, like the deeply intelligent, witty brainiac one. And trust me, I have so much to say about this fucking book. And honestly, I read this because it's been on my list for forever. Wuthering Heights is what Bella reads in Twilight. It's like her favorite book because it's this, she's in love with this nasty, horrible creature of a human being, right? Like that, there are parallels between the storyline of Wuthering Heights and what Heathcliff is, and then what Edward Cullen believes himself to be. And quite honestly, what vampires are, right? Like they're creatures, they're monsters. They're not of this earth. They're like evil. And through all that, a woman's ability to love the creature. You know what I mean? So much to say about Wuthering Heights. Let me sort of organize my thoughts into what I want to say. Wuthering Heights, published 1847. This book, this one was published in 2003, $4.95. It was sold for $5. Bitch, I got like a re-edition of it and it was like 20. Bitch, like, come on. Come on. I also believe, and this is my, I don't know jack shit about publishing and about that whole tea, but like these classics where the money that would go to, you know, whoever's profiting off of the sale of this book, because especially when things are made and remade into adaptations and movies and this and that, like when they recircle back into pop culture, that money, you know, sales are going to spike. I don't even know if it benefits the estate of the Bronte sisters. Like, I think that when it reaches the level of a classic, you know, something like a Mary Shelley or the Bronte sisters or Dracula or whatever, those should go into a like a public charity fund. Do you know what I mean? I think it's deeply, obviously, it's deeply unfair. So much of the entertainment industry is deeply unfair to the artist, to the creative. But like everyone collectively profits, like culturally, from reading these old books. And I think that it is such a shame that it's just like penny pinching publishers who get to keep that money versus like putting that back into building up public libraries or making public libraries a place that people want to spend their free time, you know, like reinvesting into the literary community. I think, I don't know. I'll let me cook up some ideas, okay? Because the wheels are turning, the gears are turning and shifting. Anyway, Wuthering Heights, let's talk about it. I'll read you my Goodreads review. Because I look, Letterboxd, yay. Okay. Letterboxd for me is like, yeah, I liked it or I didn't like it. Films, I have much more fun, and this is my opinion. I have much more fun diving into and reviewing and analyzing a book that I can spend my own time with. I can go back and reread a section if I need to. I can interpret the characters over and over and over versus with a film. I love film. Obviously, I love movies. I love film. But I cannot, I think I just absorb creative media so slowly because I want to savor it. I want to savor every moment. I want to spend time with it. And I want to be able to go back and relive it and relive it and like, okay, what happened here? And, you know, I think also spending time with a book is more intimate than watching a movie. Does that make sense? Like the book is physically, it's physical media. And while I love watching movies, I have to see a movie at least two times to really be like, okay, I can give an accurate, personal, subjective opinion on this movie because I feel like I've really absorbed. I saw Frankenstein twice. You know, like it's like it almost solidifies your opinions. So I don't know. I'm talking out of my ass. I prefer Goodreads to Letterboxd is all I'm trying to say because for me, it's easier to collect my thoughts in a wholesome way and an all-encompassing way and put it on Goodreads. And I wish Goodreads had half-star ratings, okay? Goodreads, come on. Listen to your fucking user base. Like, the app is shit. We all are okay with that because the concept is good. I know StoryGraph. I know this. I know whatever. Like, why can't Goodreads just update it? Like, genuinely, what the fuck? Okay, let's go to my review of Wuthering Heights. This was a 4-star read for me. And this has spoilers in it. Okay, spoiler, this was published over 200 years ago. So, no, sorry, 150. 175 years ago? 175 years ago. Oh, and let me address the elephant in the room. I got inches. I'm back to long hair, bitch. I was feeling it was not giving, okay? Now I have my hair back on. Hair makes an outfit. And I wish that wasn't the case. And also, I have this whole complex about I think I'm going bald and my PCOS. And like, my hair has never been thinner. And I have to use root spray and all this bullshit because it's like literally so thin. And so getting extensions to me, like, I notice hair. You know the thing that you're insecure about, right? That's what I'm trying to say. The thing you're insecure about is what you notice first on people. And I am insecure about my hair. And so that's, I literally, like, look at, you know, I'm on Pinterest or I'm in real life or I'm, like, on the streets. And I'm just like, I think that an ugly outfit or a mid outfit can be totally transformed by, like, incredible hair, incredible glam. Which is true for everything. But I need long hair. And so I'm having a moment, like, let me live through this. Because y'all remember, can my editor put up a picture, a throwback? The first time I ever got extensions and I was like, make me Pamela Anderson, girl. The bleach blonde was not giving. It was not doing what it needed to do. But I needed to do it. Okay? Like, we all go through phases. My parents have said that to me my whole life. Like, that was a phase for you. And guess what? They're right. They were right. But I will say, I don't, when you're in the middle of the phase, it doesn't feel like a phase. Cause I'm in the middle of this Victorian Gothic shit right now, still, and it doesn't feel like it's a phase. It feels like this is sticking for a long time. Especially because I think I'm going to get a tattoo for it. Okay. I'm going to find some real, I'm going to get an artist probably to draw it up and like something that matches my life and my vibe. And I'm probably going to get it tattooed. So if you guys don't fucking mind. Anyway, Wuthering Heights. Wuthering Heights is a romance novel, but it's this, I think it's referred to as gothic, but like we discussed a few episodes ago, gothic can encompass so many different things. Gothic can mean anything from architecture to something a little bit spooky to real goths, like the goth community. Like there, the spectrum of what that definition can mean is contextual and it also shifts and changes. When I say gothic or when I refer to gothic, usually it's like gothic literature, which means something a little bit macabre from a specific time period when there was a surgence of interest in the supernatural, in the great beyond, in things that are really dark and gloomy. This fucking book is really dark. And I don't think I didn't really have any preconceived notions of what this book was about. Or I knew it was a romance, which like love, but in the way that Pride and Prejudice is a romance, like love Pride and Prejudice, but that is deeply like, it is simply interpersonal dialogue. Like that is Pride and Prejudice. And of course it's a lot of ruminating and yearning. The yearning is what makes that book. But Wuthering Heights, there is this element that I had no idea about of like class struggle and poverty. They fit into the main theme. Those are not the main theme, but racism, sexism, of course, because we're talking about the mid-19th century. But at the core of it, it's about suffering. It's about people being deeply unhappy in their circumstance and being kept apart. And it's very dark. It's fueled by like cynicism. It's a very cynical book. And you watch some of the characters kind of have their livelihood taken away by the cruelty of others. And you see them conform to this, it's like survival instinct. If everyone around you is miserable and you're a ray of sunshine, they're going to do everything they can to like dim that light. So you might as well dim it yourself and just conform to how they're living, even if it's fucking misery. And through all that, through the cynicism and the darkness and the misery is love. And that is the root of like every single character's suffering is lost love or a lack thereof from the very beginning. Okay. And that is so like deeply fucking, it's so the human race. We all just want to be loved and to love. Holy shit. But this is almost like it's under a magnifying glass how much the lack of affection can affect a person. And especially if you've had a small taste of it and then it's ripped away from you, you are going to spend the rest of your life toiling and yearning and pining to get that love back, even though it is fucking impossible. Okay, so general outline of this beautiful book is it's set in, I think, the early 1800s. There is a household full of siblings. It's a brother and a sister. The father is very tenderhearted. And on one of his travels, he brings back an orphan boy who is a gypsy, dark-skinned gypsy from somewhere, one of his travels. We don't know Heathcliff's background, okay? It's never revealed. And that's part of why he is so fucking miserable, is because his lack of identity, his lack of connection with his real family, and like being plucked and inserted into a household that does not want him there. And they make it abundantly clear. The father really has a soft spot for Heathcliff. I think Heathcliff is also, I've been meaning to Google this. I was waiting until I talked about it on the podcast. It's this bitch, Emily Bronte. She had like a few crude, crass inserts into this book in terms of names and like sexual innuendos. There's a rocky overlook that they keep referring to. It's called Penis Stone Crags. Penis Stone. Heathcliff meaning. Cliff near a heath. Oh, yeah. Heathcliff, like bush. Cliff near a heath. Uncultivated land and steep rock, evoking rugged nature, but its primary fame comes from Wuthering Heights. where the character is a passionate, vengeful anti-hero symbolizing intense emotion and dark romanticism. Okay, heath is like a bush, I'm pretty sure. Heath, meaning characteristic vegetation of heather, gorse, and coarse grasses, a dwarf shrub with small leathery leaves. Okay, so that's funny. So his name literally is like member and bush.
Got a DIYer on your list? Lowe's December deal drops to the rescue. Get two free select tools from DeWalt, Craftsman, or Kobalt when you buy a select battery or combo kit. Plus, save $40 on select Craftsman V20 tools. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offers valid 12/4 through 12/24 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on East Broad Street in Columbus.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
So Bushcliff and Wuthering Heights. Heathcliff is inserted into this family dynamic that does not want him there. And once the father dies, they wish that Heathcliff would fucking die too. Well, because the sister and Heathcliff are not blood related, they really form a liking for each other. Like, they really become attached. They grow up, you know, life happens. You marry off the sister, the brother gets married, all this. All the while, the brother is so cruel to Heathcliff. All of these things contribute to why he turns out to be this horrible, horrible person that he is. And I mean horrible. Some of the shit that he says in this book, I was like, God damn! Just cruel. Utter cruelty. Unimaginable cruelty. But there is someone for everyone, okay? Because Catherine loves him. Because she has a seed that grows into a big fucking plant of cruelty in her and her own soul that Heathcliff, it's akin to Heathcliff's, okay? They were cut from the same fucking cloth, girl. Only they can understand each other and only they are meant for each other. And anything else is just ancillary. Nothing fucking matters except Catherine and Heathcliff. Okay, a tragedy occurs. And this whole book is set up in kind of, you know how Frankenstein is written through letters from a ship captain to his sister retelling this tale of Victor Frankenstein when he's discovered, like, out in the ice on his boat? That sort of literary structure of it's written as a series of letters. This is written as a series of almost diary entries that are recounting gossip that this traveler heard. Okay, so he's like a merchant. The narrator of this story. He's like a merchant that comes to Wuthering Heights, which is the name of the home, like the estate, I guess. The it's not a castle. What am I trying to say? Yeah, I guess the name of the estate is called Wuthering Heights. And that's where the brother and the sister, Hindley, Catherine, and Heathcliff all grew up. Well, he takes up lodging there. This is like 25 years after all the main events of this book happen. This traveler, Mr. Lockwood, requests a room from Heathcliff, who is the new landlord, okay? So Mr. Lockwood is a tenant. He's renting a room. And while he's in the room, he starts seeing all these like clues and personalizations that are on the walls and on the furniture and books left behind and all this shit. And as he's in this room spending the first night, a ghost appears to him and is like, let me in, and leaves a claw mark on his arm and like assaults him. And he's like, oh my fucking God, and slams the window. Heathcliff, the landlord, comes running in and through the window, Catherine! Fuck! And Mr. Lockwood's like, what the actual fuck is going on here? What is going on? Who are you people? What was that? Oh my God, what was that? James, what was that? I think I see something looking at me through that window. Like, literally. So Heathcliff goes, and like runs out of the room. Mr. Lockwood's like, hey, what the fuck are these people doing out here in the boonies in the middle of nowhere? Well, Mr. Lockwood goes back to this other estate that's on the property as well and starts talking to the landlady, okay? One of the, like, housekeepers that's there. And he goes, girl, what is the motherfucking tea with the landlord? And I think I saw a ghost. And there's all these, like, who is Catherine Linton or Earnshaw? Who is Catherine Earnshaw? And, like, I also saw Catherine Heathcliff. Like, were they married? Who the fuck is this girl? And Nellie, the housekeeper, goes, girl, let me tell you. And it's so cute how Bronte writes it. She's like, she went and got her knitting, her little project she was sewing, and she sat down by the fire and she began. And so that's the literary structure of the story, is at the very beginning, it's this like ghost encounter and this like, clearly we know that Heathcliff has lost someone, but we don't know who it is. We don't know their relation. Even me at the beginning, I was trying to draw like a family tree, like who the fuck are these people? And then it's slowly revealed to you the childhood, how they became very close, how they separated, how things ended. And then at the very end, the final ending, right? And it's just filled with so much cruelty. But at the core of it, why are we cruel to each other? It's because we're all afraid and we're all insecure and we're all jealous people. And we're all at our core. I think, you know, we come back to this a lot on this podcast of like, is humanity inherently good or evil? And is the question neither? Like, is the answer neither? Because maybe we're neutral, even though we might have behavioral compulsions or like preset compulsions in our DNA and our genetic makeup. I think it truly is nature versus nurture. Maybe humans are neutral and everything that's in your environment shapes you. Or, girl, we're bad. Humans are bad, and it takes a concerted effort to be good, to be something good in the world. And it's hard because cruelty is easy. It's so fucking easy to be cruel. And that's my question, is why does it come so natural? That's what makes me believe that humans are bad. I don't know, that we are predisposed to be cruel. What does that mean? I don't know. I need to read some bullshit. If y'all have any book recs on that, I would love to dive into that. Or even like scholarly articles or research or whatever. I would really, that's always been something that intrigues me, is like this eternal question of, are we good or bad? And of course, that is so subjective and it is so dependent on the person. But I feel like enough experiments probably or social research has been conducted to be able to say definitively, is humanity predisposed to be X way or Y way? I don't know. In my opinion, I do think that humans have a cruel nature that you need to be coaxed out of. And that's kind of the purpose of life, right? Is like improvement and betterment and ultimately making it as comfortable as we can for everyone, including ourselves. And that takes effort, because if it was easy, everyone could do it. Are y'all rock with me? You understand what I'm saying? I don't know. Not to say that you should be good, obviously. Okay, whatever. Okay, here is my review. Oh, and then I'm going to read some passages from the book, because of course I underline the fuck out of every book I read. This episode is sponsored by Aura Frames. Attention, last minute Christmas shoppers. I'm sure you know the feeling. The shelves are empty and ideas are running low. Aura Frames is a solution. It's a gift that feels personal. My mom is super tough to shop for, and women like that really would usually prefer something sentimental versus material. Aura Frames is truly the gift that keeps giving, because you can set it up in any room and keep adding photos from anywhere, anytime. Moms love it. You can upload unlimited photos and video, just download the Aura app and connect to Wi-Fi. And every frame comes packaged in a premium gift box with no price tag. That's right, you don't have to wrap it. You can't wrap togetherness, but you can frame it. For a limited time, save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $35 off Aura's best-selling Carver Matte Frames, named number one by Wirecutter, by using promo code BROSKI at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code BROSKI. This deal is exclusive to listeners and frames sell out fast, so order yours now to get it in time for the holidays. Support my show by mentioning me at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. Shop my Etsy collection of original holiday gifts that will make everyone on your list feel seen. No matter who you're shopping for, it's easy to find something that feels personal, original, and special. Everything on Etsy feels one of a kind, just like the people I'm shopping for. And the best part? You're supporting small shops and real people with every order. That makes the gift feel extra special. On my curated picks, there's a bunch of different tiers of types of gifts. We've got like medieval, we've got spooky, we've got country. I'm sure you can find something you like, especially if you're a citizen of Broski Nation. For gifts that say, I get you, shop Etsy. Here's my review. So good. Those damn Bronte sisters know how to write a perfectly juicy, well-crafted, perfectly descriptive sentence. So many times I would be reading, made a typo in my Goodreads review. Fuck, they're going to laugh at me. So many times I'd be reading and would have to pause just to appreciate the grammar and the vocab in this book. That is so true. This era of writing is my perfect book, to be honest. Okay. Like, I know that bookstores and apps like Goodreads and services like BookTok or BookTube, you can find your milieu, you can find your niche, and you can really lean into that and be like, okay, this is what I really love to read. This is my thing. For a lot of people, that's romanticy. For some, it's sci-fi, you know, whatever, or high fantasy. For me, I recently, and again, I don't know if this is a phase, but I love this era of writing. The English language has never been richer and more perfectly aptly used than in this era, where the sentence structure is just so rich. And it's so, I honestly think that reading it out loud, you miss some of the little Easter eggs and nuances that only make sense to me when I'm reading it in my head. I just, so many times, literally, I would pause and be like, fuck, that's a good sentence. And I love a book that makes you pull out the dictionary and look up a word and learn a new word. So amazing. That's you know, like when you're playing Rock Band or Guitar Hero and as you're playing, you're getting stars. Like, that earned a star for me. Like, it, immediately, even if I don't like this book, that's immediately, it at least has one star because the writing is so stellar. It is so spectacular. She has such a grasp on the English language. Amazing. And to be able to wield the English language into, like, being your bitch. It's just amazing. Okay, here's what I said. Misery begets misery begets misery. And those who have lost their great love, their grand purpose in life and reason for being, it makes that misery so much more consuming. And the memory of the love all the more heartbreaking. The family tree is T, and I love how Bronte works us backwards to get the full story. Okay, this is a spoiler. If you plan on reading Wuthering Heights, skip ahead 2 minutes. When Catherine is dying of melancholy, and Heathcliff is in her chambers, and they're having a diva off, right? They're like, who can be the most fucking dramatic? I'm like, you killed me, Heathcliff. And he's like, bitch, if you die, you're gonna kill me. So you're my murderer, ho. And they're having a, like, diva love off. And it's so dramatic. And I said they're having a diva off with the most romantic dialogue I've ever read, where they're accusing each other of killing each other by being apart. And he says, it is hard to forgive and to look at those eyes and feel those wasted hands. Kiss me again and don't let me see your eyes. I forgive what you have done to me. I love my murderer, but yours? How can I? When it's the same person, I forgive my murderer because she's going to kill him, but she's also killing herself. And how can he forgive her because she's killing herself because she's sick? Oh. Then, later on, Catherine is talking to Nelly, right? She's talking about how she's so in love. She's this, she's that. And Nelly's like, what the fuck are you talking about, bitch? He is so horrible. You love him? Y'all are made for each other, I fucking guess. Catherine says, My greatest thought in living is Heathcliff. If all else perished and he remained, I should still continue to be. Nelly, I am Heathcliff. He's always, always in my mind. Not as a pleasure, but as my own being. I have a chill. I just got a chill. Are you stupid? Oh, and then I said, Heathcliff loving her through her insanity and fits of passion and absurdity and cruelty, because he truly was the only person alive who understood her. And she was married to somebody else named Edgar who would have walked across hot coals to please her. She didn't love him. She loved Heathcliff, bitch, and they could never be together because he's the only one who ever understood her. Edgar did the best he could, but this is a quote from Heathcliff. He might as well plant an oak in a flower pot and expect it to grow. Oh, my God. Because he understood. He understood. Catherine is this wild thing, this wild creature after his own heart. And you can't contain that wild creature in a fucking, you know, 7-bedroom estate and confine her to a bedroom with a window. She needs to be naked out in the creek, being a freak weirdo with Heathcliff. Like, that pretty much sealed her fate as dying prematurely. She was not happy. And she got melancholy. She was depressed. She had a broken heart. And that bitch had died. It's so sad. God. Okay, so that's kind of my Wuthering Heights spiel. Just a quick 30 minutes of talking about Wuthering Heights. I love this damn book. It's a 4-star read for me. I saved a bunch of other Bronte sister books. The House on the Something Hill by, I think, Anne Bronte. Okay, I will be rereading, The Tenant of Wildfell Hall by Anne Bronte. This is some tea of like some woman shows up to this hotel or estate or something and falls in love with this dude. And the dude's like, tell me more about yourself. Like, what happened? How did you get here? And apparently there's some crazy tea about her last marriage and like really scary, devastating facts. And like, it's kind of a mystery. I really want to read this. This has 4 stars. On Goodreads, which is pretty high. I'm going to read that. Jane Eyre, obviously, by Charlotte Bronte. That's a classic, like, high school English class. You have to read it and study it. This has a 4.16, Jane Eyre does. And I know that some of the most important creatives to me, like, in my life, love Jane Eyre. And only thing I remember about Jane Eyre from reading it in school is the crazy woman in the attic. And like, obviously in high school, I wasn't really locked in. I just wanted to get a good grade. I wasn't really absorbing unless it was a book I really liked, like Brave New World or we read Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad. That shit changed me a little bit. Like, that was my first foray into the extent and the horrors of colonialism. You know, as a 17-year-old, it's like you're kind of, ow. It's your innocence being stripped away. You know, you want to believe that humans are not capable of such cruelty, but ultimately, and so that was my first kind of exposure to Heart of Darkness goes deep into it, like into the daily life of what that was like. Also, I keep talking about it, but Burmese Days by George Orwell, one of these fucking days, I'm going to read it. It's on my nightstand. It's a similar thing. It's about his experience under colonial rule and being an enforcer of colonial rule in Burma. So that's obviously, I'm going to tap into that soon. Next up on my list, other than the Bronte sisters ones, are The Silent Patient. Everyone loves The Silent Patient. I feel like I need to bring it back into the modern century just for a moment. Like, I need to, you know, that's more so just like a pleasure read. Well, all of these are pleasure reads, but Silent Patient is like, I want to stay up to date with what everyone's talking about. So I'm going to read The Silent Patient. Then I'm going to head back into the past with Jekyll and Hyde. Dr. Jekyll and Hyde's a super... I got this cool version of it from a secondhand bookstore that has on each page vocab word definitions. And guess what? I'm geeking. I'm excited to read it because it's kind of annoying, even though it's kind of fun. When you're reading an old book, like this version, even printed in 2003, in the back had a kind of, I guess, what would you call it? An index of sorts. They called it a notes to the text, Wuthering Heights was first published in London in 1847. It appeared as the first two volumes of a three-volume set, the third volume of which was Agnes Grey by Emily Bronte's younger sister, Anne, who also wrote the Wildfell Hall. Subsidized by their authors, these volumes appeared as the work of Ellis and Acton Bell. They published under a man's name so that more people would buy it and read it. A second commercial edition of Wuthering Heights alone appeared in 1850 with Emily Bronte's name on the title page. It was edited by Charlotte Bronte, who brought Joseph, who's one of the characters in the book, who has this thick as fuck Northern English accent. And you know that area of like Shields or like, I'm literally, Sam Fender is like kind of my only, but you know that area where it's like, way aye, man. It's so thick and it's almost its own, it is its own dialect, but it sometimes skews into its own language. The Dr. Jekyll and Hyde book that I got is very, it's not so much that, it's more so like these incredibly specific vocab words. Who wrote Jekyll and Hyde? They just make it easy and they put it on the page. Robert Louis Stevenson. 1886 is when it was published. Gothic horror novella. Bitch, I'm on this gothic horror shit. You hoes can't tell me anything. This is my shit. I love it. 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 If y'all want book club, broski book club merch, would you want that? I really want to make, and it's not going to be like a hoodie and a t-shirt. Like, I would want to make book club shit. Like, a tote with a separate little book compartment in it. I would want to make like bookmarks and little annotation things. I would want to do like a blanket, socks, like a real reading book club merchandise shit if you would want that. And it would probably be gothic, like dark academia themed. I don't know. I think that'd be cute. Let me know if you guys would. Let me gauge interest if you guys would be interested in that. Because if not, I'm just going to have to go on Etsy and get it for myself. So. Okay, something else that I've really, 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 really been into lately that I feel like I have a blind spot culturally for this, Studio Ghibli. Hey! What the fuck is wrong with me, dude? I was raised in a Disney family. Yay. Right? Like, I'm familiar with all the Disney movies, all the whatever. Yay. Studio Ghibli is something that I'm honestly kind of happy I saved it to watch it as an adult because I have a much higher and like wider appreciation for what those movies are. So I started with Spirited Away. Amazing. And of course I watched the hour-long explanation of like all the Japanese, I guess, cultural lore that is behind a lot of the characters and the creative choices in the movie. Things like the radish spirit and like what No Face is based on and all that. Very interesting. Very interesting. Obviously, I cried. It's so, I mean, just the soundtrack, the animation, the sprawling landscapes, the journey she goes on. It's truly, oh my God, and the voice acting. Who plays the girl who helps her at the bathhouse is the voice of Meg from Hercules. And I literally was like, it's Meg! Get out of there. Get out of there, you big lug. Oh, wow. Now, what does she call him? Boy. Hero. Hero. What does Meg call Hercules? Wonder Boy! Wonder Boy! Wonder Boy! Hunkules, Jercules. Yeah, Wonder Boy. Get out of there, Wonder Boy. Anyway, okay, Spirited Away. Watch that. Fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. Next, I watched Howl's Moving Castle. Howl's Moving Castle, fantastic, another 5-star watch for me. I think I like Howl's Moving Castle more than Spirited Away. They're very different movies and they're very different themes. Howl's Moving Castle is much more surrealist. It's much more Victorian themed, which I love it. Oh my God, when I first was like, is this Victorian steampunk themed? And it was, and it's like in a different, you know, reality and dimension, whatever. I got my life, bitch. The costumes, the buildings, the structures, how the castle moves, all of the like design choices. I was just, that was, I think they made that for me. I think when I met that, I met it with me in mind. Truly, truly so amazing. I think that at the beginning of the movie when she is turned into an old woman, I started to freak out because I was on an edible when I watched the movie. And I was like, what would I do? I was like, what would I do if an old fucking witch turned me into an old woman? And I was like, obviously, I'd freak the fuck out. I would freak out. And then throughout the movie, actually very quickly, she accepts it. She's like, all right, I guess I'm fucking old now. That attitude to me is just like, you know what? Hell yeah, queen. Hell yes, queen. She accepts it. And she almost starts making fun of it. You know, she's like, for an old woman like me, you know, you can't, yeah, got my walking stick, bruh. Like, she's 6'7", bruh, bruh, L moment. Hold this L as an old woman. So I really, throughout it, I don't know, you know, on an edible, it just heightens your emotions. I was eating Randy's donuts and I was like, that's the best movie ever. And it is. And so I think that attitude of accepting, like, well, this is my life now, I'm going to make the most of it. Also, as an old woman, I think you get these privileges of like exerting your will on people and situations, and people are like, ah, she's old, just give it to her. Nah, she's gonna die soon, just let her do it. So she really kind of tapped into that and utilized it, like, well, I'm gonna do this fucking anyway. Oh, that's the rule. Oh, I don't give a fuck, I'm gonna do what I want to do. And ultimately it was for the betterment of everyone. Because women know best. Okay, so Howl's Moving Castle, for me, 5 stars. And Howl seeing her the whole time through the curse, like, as her younger self. And it being this, like, interstellar time loop thing at the end, too. I was gagged. Okay. I watched Howl's Moving Castle. Next, I watched Princess Mononoke. Wow. And I was joking with my sister's boyfriend because we were talking about it. I was like, have you seen Studio Ghibli? And he was like, yeah, dude, I've seen every single freaking one. They came back into theaters and I forced Sierra to come with me. And I was like, period. And so I was like, what should I watch next? Because he was the resident expert. He was like, okay, I would really recommend doing the older ones first and then jumping into like Boy and the Heron, whatever. So next I'm going to do Kiki's Delivery Service. I'm going to do My Neighbor Totoro. I'm going to do all those kind of, you know, like, I think My Neighbor Totoro is a bit more just aesthetic and it's slower and it's like a kid movie, which I love. I don't give a fuck. So I'm going to jump into those next before I start the newer ones. But Princess Mononoke, when he was describing it to me, I was like, oh, so it's like Japanese Lorax? Oh, it's like the Lorax. Okay, I'm getting it. This episode is sponsored by SeatGeek. Everybody lock in. Mumford and Sons are on tour. And I got my tickets on SeatGeek, which is why I want to give the sponsor of today's episode, SeatGeek, a huge shout out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. We know it. There's more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. Right now, you can get tickets to Lorde, the Jonas Brothers, Lady Gaga, the Backstreet Boys, Cardi B, Zara Larsson, Chris Stapleton, and more. I love using SeatGeek. I saw Tame Impala a few weeks ago, and it was unreal. He does this little DJ set on a B stage. Amazing. We got the tickets super last minute, and it's a good thing SeatGeek had my back, because each ticket is rated on a scale of 1 to 10. So you know you're getting a good deal. Look for the green dots. Green means good, red means bad. Plus, every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. With the holiday season just around the corner, give the gift of tickets this year and use code BROSKI2025 for 10% off your SeatGeek tickets. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code BROSKI2025. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thanks, SeatGeek! Princess Mononoke was like, genuinely, I can't with movies like that where it's about protecting the planet and about hurting Mother Earth, hurting the spirit of the forest. You should be killed. Like, oh my God. Oh my God. The whole plot of the movie being like humanity and industrialization and capitalism is killing everyone that is involved in the process of it. It may look like improvement and it may look like development, But what is the end of the tunnel here? You know what I mean? Like, where does it end? It's exponential and it's rapid and it is not sustainable. So that movie explores all of that. And of course, it's through a lot of, that's one actually that I haven't watched. Princess Mononoke, lore explained. Like, I really want to know the influences on some of the animation choices, on some of the representations of, like, Spirit of the Forest or the gods, you know, like the wild boar being a god and the wolf being another god. And there's all these different ones. What do they represent? And what's the history? And also, like, this idea of the wolf having a human, I say in quotations, a half-human daughter. It's like, okay, acceptance is possible and harmony is possible. And it's all based on respect. And I think the whole thing is, you know, like, humans don't respect the spirit of the forest. And look what happens. So I really, really enjoy that one. Was really heavy. Versus I didn't think Spirited Away and Howl's Moving Castle were that heavy. Princess Mononoke, I finished it and I was like, fuck. So great. Really, really, really great. And the lead character, what's his name? Ashitaka. Ashitaka, hot. Okay, he's a hero. Prince, he's a prince. He, like, every step along the way made the right decision. And I was like, that's my boy. That's my fucking boy. Also, by the way, I watched the English dub version. What's his name? Who plays Jiko? Billy Bob Thornton. What the fuck? They're sitting over the fire, like, eating ramen, and he's on the traditional... Let me look up what those are called. I believe it's called a gita. Geta? Gita. It's the wooden clogs with stilts under them. And I want to know what the purpose is. Historical usage... Can I fucking talk? The older practice of wearing flat pieces of wood on one's feet when working in the paddies to keep from sinking into the mud. Similar in principle to snowshoes. This latter footwear persisted in use into the 20th century as tajita, literally paddy jita, geta. Am I saying it right? From phonetic atiji, using the term. How to pronounce jita? Geta. Sorry, geta. He wears, anyway, what was I saying? Jiko, is that his name? Jiko, he wears geta and he's like, eating ramen over the fire and they're talking and they're like going deep into the lore and it's fucking Billy Bob Thornton voicing him. So he's like, I'll tell y'all something you need to know. Like, why the fuck did they pick him to voice him? He's like, yeah, boy, you get over here and I'm gonna tell you something. What the fuck? Redneck Jiko. I was like, of all the voice actors they could have used, and I think this was in the 90s too, this was in the late 90s, Billy Bob fucking Thornton? At least Calcifer in Howl's Moving Castle, Billy Crystal. Hilarious, right? At least there was kind of this element of, there's funny, it's a more neutral kind of accent. Billy Bob Thornton is a very Southern. He's from, like, Kentucky or something. He's from Arkansas. Damn, he's 70. Yeah, from Arkansas. He caught him over there and he's like, I must defend the spirit of the forest. Well, boy, I tell you how to do it. You got to listen to me one time, two times. Here, have some more ramen. Okay, here's what we're going to do. What the fuck? I was laughing my ass off, bro. Like, pick someone else. I'm sorry to God. Anyway, the last thing that I really need to discuss, something that happened to me 2 days ago. Okay, something happened. I was invited by The Hollywood Reporter and YouTube to The Hollywood Reporter Women in Entertainment Gala. Okay? It was at the Beverly Hills Hotel. Very stunning, very gorgeous, very LA. Okay? It was a very Los Angeles thing. And it was very, very cool to see this blending of old and new Hollywood, right? Like, Drew was there with me, of course. We were both honored. And it was like, obviously, that's my girl, that's my twin, that's my sister. We have so many long conversations about, like, the future of what this industry is. And there is room. Drew always says this. There is room for everyone at the table. There is room for everyone in this room. There's no competition. There's no like changing of the guard, really. It's more so like, are you prejudiced towards the new generation or maybe how quote unquote easy you think it is to be in this room? Or just like, it's honestly just a check mark where we all are culturally, where at this same event, J-Lo and Gwyneth Paltrow are getting honored. And then me and Drew are in the audience at the respective like TikTok and YouTube tables. So it's just, things are changing and it's very exciting to be in those rooms and to witness it and to be a part of it, you know? Because at the core of it, we're just having fun. We're doing our jobs that are our dream jobs. And we're at this event and that's tea. That was a whole other like, right, like that conversation is just, I wanted to mention that. That it's cool to watch us all be in the same room. And it's also fucking crazy, which leads me to my next point. I sit down at the table. I'm looking at the menu. I'm looking at the like run of show. And it's like, oh, opening remarks from Jimmy Kimmel's wife and all this. I'm like, oh, yay. Rachel Sennett opened. Hilarious. Love her to death. She did like a little intro. You know, we're going through the whatever. And then Michelle Carré leans over to me because she's sitting next to me. We've been talking and she goes, do you see Robert Downey Jr. is going to be here? What? I said, Michelle, what the fuck are you talking about? I said, where did you see that? She goes, look, it's at the bottom of the Robert Downey Jr., presenter for Gwyneth Paltrow. I said, oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. I need to get the fuck up out of here now. I need to leave. I need to leave. And she goes, yeah, dude, he's going to be sitting right there. Sitting right there. And so literally an icy chill runs down my spine. I'm like, I cannot. Y'all remember when I went to see McNeil, his play in New York about AI, whatever. And I literally got as close of seats as I could because I love Robert Downey Jr. He's someone that I'm weird about. Y'all know I'm weird about people. And I'm trying to get better the older I get, okay? Like, I was weird about Austin Butler. I was weird about... Name any celebrity, dude. I have been weird about them. And then ultimately I have to meet them and I embarrass myself. Robert Downey Jr. Ooh. He's someone I don't fucking play about. I mean it. Him and Grian Chatton, I don't want to meet them. How many fucking times have I said that on this podcast? Let me admire their work and who they are from afar. Okay. The event's going on, whatever, you know, all the speakers are coming up. Yay. I have a pit in my stomach. Also, like, I'm fully aware of the irony of, like, I'm there at a women in entertainment event. And I'm crying, by the way. Every presenter is fantastic. Like, they're the perfect mix of funny and serious. And, you know, they honored some young people and then some, like, legendary people. And it was, like, a beautiful evening. Or it was a breakfast. It was a beautiful morning. But the whole time, I'm like, fucking Robert Downey Jr. is right. He's going to be right there. Like, I'm freaking out over a man when I'm at the Women in Entertainment. I know. Okay. The breakfast goes on. He enters the room. And I didn't recognize him at first because he's gone full gray. He's abandoned the Tony Stark hair dye. Okay. He walks in. He sits at the table. Oh, my God. He's sitting right next to Gwyneth Paltrow. Okay. And I'm the whole time I'm looking like this. I'm literally like, and then I got my camera and I'm kind of doing this. And I'm like, fuck, don't be weird. Don't be weird. And I'm like, okay, I'm taking a picture for my mom. That's not weird. It was for me. I started taking a picture. After a while, he gets up, he does his speech. Okay. He is in full blown RDJ mode. And honestly, the older he gets, the worse it gets. Okay. He becomes more RDJ by the day. His condition is being exacerbated. And so he does his little speech. He's like honoring Gwyneth Paltrow. And it's kind of a roast of Gwyneth Paltrow as well. I'm laughing my ass off. He has such a specific sense of humor that informed how I am. I just can't. And so he's up there and I'm losing my mind. He honors Gwyneth. Gwyneth goes up there. She's laughing. She's like, Robert, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, she's like, thank you guys for being here. Today has been amazing. Like, I feel honored to even be in the same room as all of you. And I've always walked my own path and I've always been weird and controversial. And, you know, she made this statement that was so tea about, like, which is controversial is what Hollywood calls women who are not afraid to be themselves and like all this shit. And it was like, you know, she really did her big one and she was up there and I was like, what a queen. That's my Pepper Potts. That's Pepper Potts and Tony Stark, by the way. And so they hug. The event's over. Okay. They start playing music. The lights come up, whatever. Drew beelines to me and goes, let's go meet him. What? No, 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 no. I don't want. And I literally was like, Drew, I'm pleading with her. Drew, you don't understand. I don't want to. I don't want to. I don't want to. She goes, I don't give a fuck. Let's go. Grabs my hand, drags me over. And I'm literally like digging my heels in the ground. I don't want to. I don't want to. Please. No, 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 no. We are so close. Because Drew, let me tell you something about Drew. She's going to get what she came for. If she's got something on her mind, she's going to chase it. And that's my bitch. She did that with fucking Beyonce too. When we met Beyonce, she was like, Britney's from Houston. Like, that's my sister, dude. She's literally my blood. And I'm like, okay, RuPaul laugh and blow. He goes, literally me about to meet Robert Downey Jr. She walks us over there. I swear to God, he's 3 feet away. Like, I could have reached out and touched him if I wanted to. His bodyguard comes and takes him and Gwyneth away. Oh, oh, thank God. Oh, thank God. Bye, 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 bye. Get the fuck out. Bye. Drew goes, damn. He was so close. I literally couldn't. Ah, that's all right. Listen. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, I really wanted to meet. No. Saved by the bell, bitch. I was so relieved. I genuinely can't. Like, I got real, real weird. So we're heading out. And Drew and I are just, I mean, I love her to fucking death. We're just talking about how unreal it is that what we do and the waves we're making by just simply being ourselves, to be honest. Like, of course, this job is a business and I run a business and like I run a pseudo production company. And it's a very intense and 24/7 job, but it is my dream job. And there is nothing else on this fucking planet I would rather do than this job. And we were talking about it and how just, you know, sometimes people in old Hollywood, I mean the Hollywood of the late 90s, early 2000s, they kind of look down their nose at people like me and Drew. And it's like, okay, I'm one table over from you, girl. You know, it's just, it's very telling of the times we live in. It's very interesting. And as TV dies and streaming is king and as late night dies and, you know, Hot Ones is king, it's like times are a-changing. Okay, one other small update. I am probably going to see the Nutcracker Ballet in Houston. The Houston Ballet Company is fucking period. It's really period. I'm very, very, very excited, and I hope we're close. And if not, I'm gonna bring my glasses. I'm gonna have my phone like this the whole time, zoomed in, and I'm gonna be watching it on my phone. And it's gonna be split screen. The other half's gonna be Family Guy compilation. The other half's gonna be the ballet. Homer Simpson funniest moments compilation, 7 hours. Anyway. Didn't even talk about Christmas. Guess we'll talk about Christmas next week. Anyway, love you guys. Thank you to Elizabeth for decorating this set for me. She did a stellar job. It's so slay. And I love y'all to death. If you want merch, broski.shop. Head over there. We've got holiday moo-moos. We've got Broski Report merch. We've got normal moo-moos. And I think y'all sold out the slippers. So slippers are probably on back order, but you can go try to order them and they'll come when they come. Okay. I don't have the website pulled up in front of me. I'm so sorry, y'all. Song of the week is Rubber Band Man by Hozier and Mumford & Sons. Guys, I'm back on my Mumford & Sons bullshit. I'm always on my Hozier bullshit. I'm always on my fucking Hozier. Andrew Hozier burned that motherfucker. I'm always on that. Mumford & Sons, it's just like, it's so good. Every damn time. It's so good. Okay. I love y'all to death. We are weekly pumping out episodes on Royal Court. Go watch Royal Court. If you haven't seen Paul Mescal and Josh Hutcherson on Royal Court, please go fucking watch it. Those are two of my favorite ones we've done so far. And Davine Joy Randolph. That is my sister. That's my Moomoo loving sister, okay? I'm just, I love my job. I love my life. It's amazing. Thank you guys for giving a shit. Thank you guys for watching. Y'all are my sisters as well. And if there's any men who watch me, you're also my sister too, okay? Be good. Y'all be nice to each other. Go read a book and tell me what did I ask for recommendations on? Whatever I asked for recommendations on, please give them in the comments or DM them to me, okay? Love you guys. Seriously, bye for real this time. Bye. Thank you to Etsy for supporting the Broski Report. Shop my collection of original gifts at etsy.com/broskireport.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.